Welcome to the Steel Study with your hosts, Andrew and Jeremy, where Steelers football comes together with history, education, and flat-out random weirdness. Let the lesson begin.
What is up, Steel Studians? Welcome to episode number 6 of the Steel Study podcast. We're so glad that you're here with us today as we kick off a new show. And for those of you that don't know, I'm Jeremy.
Andrew.
And I'm the cooler one. And
but I'm the smarter one. So
he's okay. We can match wits. But we have a good great show planned for you today. And we're just excited that you could be here with us. Again, Andrew, who would have thought we made it to episode 6.
Now, I think you would have been a good youth group leader back in a different life.
A what
leader?
A
youth group leader, like a religious youth group leader. You have a good vibe about you.
That's kind of dubious, but okay. All right.
Hey,
for that.
I think we got an email. I got an email from cousin Chad, and I just want to give him a shout out. That was appreciated.
Awesome, Chad. Hey, props and thanks for following the site. Chad, he actually lives in Maryland, so he's fighting the good fight, the Steelers fight against the Ravens there. He's leading the charge. So glad that he's giving props. But just want to start by expressing our gratitude to everybody who is listening to the show, who's reading the content on the site. We're very grateful for that. And we hope that you continue to share what we do. And, you know, as I've said before, we're planning to do this for the long haul. We're not going anywhere. And again, just very, very happy for all your support. But we're going to jump into it. And what an exciting week. Organized team activities kicked off on May 25th. And we finally have some Steelers news, Andrew.
That they were in attendance?
Yeah, yeah. And let's start there. The number of attendees to OTAs. Yeah. I know there were concerns that there were going to be a lot of players missing due to contractual disagreements. What are your thoughts?
Listen, I'm never somebody who's very interested in the attendance. I mean, I was always the teacher who got in trouble for not taking attendance. Point being is, like, I've never been interested in who's there, who's not, and the implications regarding contracts, and that's never interested me. I was just happy to see, you know, Steelers players in Steelers helmets and, you know, jerseys and throwing the football around and running routes. And, I mean, it looks like a glorified high school practice to a certain extent, but it's springtime. We got, you know, part of the sort of calendar year that doesn't have any major football in it. And so it just felt good to get a glimpse of the team, get a glimpse of Najee Harris in a yellow 22 jersey, albeit a practice jersey. It felt really cool to see Kendrick Green in number 53 again, as weird as that may be, taking snaps at center. I don't know, man. I don't have any deep philosophical thoughts about this. It just felt good. You know, I'm a Phillies fan, and they're making it painful for me this spring. So it was really nice to have a bit of hope. You know, because as far as I'm concerned, when you're a fan, hope springs eternal. And it's just really, it's fun. And you know what? To see Ben back out there, we may not have any more left. And for my entire adult life, he's been the leader of that team, taking us to 3 Super Bowls, multiple AFC championship games. It's just, you know, the guy gets regularly dumped on for maybe past behavior, which I think is fully and completely understandable, and I would never defend him. But in some cases, it's the criticism of him on the field is just not logical, not warranted. And I know I'm sort of bleeding over into our next topic a little bit, but I'll just round it out with this. Good to see them on the field.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just the attendance at OTAs, the first set of OTAs, when you're seeing those veterans there, like Roethlisberger, like Cameron Hayward, someone who is outspoken about players attending organized team activities, I think it says a lot about the unity of the team and the leadership of the team, that you have these vets that have been playing for a significant period of time. They don't need to be there, but they're coming out. They're setting the example for the rookies, and I think that's important and shows the cohesion of the team. And to hit on your point, in terms of Roethlisberger, there was some criticism this week that came from Pro Football Focus. There was a short video posted by Dale Lally, who writes for DK Sports. Much respect for Dale and DK Sports. We love their work. But he posted a video of Ben throwing just short passes to Najee Harris. Looked like just a little drill, warm-up, if you will. And then Pro Football Focus retweeted it and said, Ben working on the deep ball. Which then there was another video posted that said something along the lines of, I believe, and I'm trying to recall this, so if I don't get it right, please forgive me. Del Wally again posted a video, said, you know, Ben's throwing the ball on the rope for 30 yards, and Pro Football Focus was like, did that happen after the video? So just snarky, snide comments, taking shots at Ben's arm strength. And the thing that I said is, thank you, Captain Obvious. We know that his arm strength at 39 is not the same that it was at 21, but he doesn't have a candy arm. So I think it's just media hacks. I'm not classifying us as media hacks, Andrew.
This is all crap that stems from last year's play calling under, Fichtner. And the lack of a running game last year necessitated a short passing game. And I think it was probably used too much. It was used to a frustrating degree. The Browns-Steelers playoff game was on NFL Network two nights ago, and I unfortunately watched part of it.
After the Penguins lost, I may add.
Yeah, right. Thank you, sports programming individuals who look to, torture Pittsburgh fans. But the point I'm trying to make is there was a necessity for those short passes last year. They were implemented in lieu of a run game. I'm not a professional football analyst. I don't do this for a living. I don't have a deep background in the X's and O's outside of high school football. But at a certain point, man, it takes some real idiocy to not realize that Ben's arm is not the issue here. Those short passes were out of necessity, and not out of some sort of deficiency. And it's quite frankly a bit just stupid. I can't stand the clickbait culture. I can't stand the clickbait sort of sports culture in particular. It's just people are generating content just to generate content. I think there's some good stories to be told. I think one of the stories that's really unique is Ben outside of Alex Smith coming back, Ben was the comeback player of the year last year as far as I was concerned. That was a really remarkable year to have after a career-threatening injury where we don't know if he was ever going to be able to throw a football again. Sort of taking a juvenile perspective and running with it and becoming incredibly popular because of it, probably.
Yeah, I could see it transforming into an internet meme. It seems like Ben is becoming the NFL's favorite punching bag or target of sophomore humor, but you know what?
Right.
Ben has always played his best football with a chip on his shoulder. And I'm sure while he's not going out of his way to read all this nonsense, I'm sure he's aware of it. And I'm sure that that's on his mental Rolodex as he's preparing for the season. So I hope he comes out guns blazing and just lights it up, man.
let's redraft 2004 real quick. You're the San Diego Chargers. You're not doing anything but drafting Ben Roethlisberger number one overall, period. Yeah, a longer career, somebody who has a tenacity to win. I can't imagine that 2004 draft in retrospect didn't go the reverse, you know, a different way than it maybe should have. I think that order might be flopped in terms of it being redone if it was today.
Agreed. And shifting gears a bit, something else that received a lot of attention this week that will have an impact on the passing game, man, Roethlisberger, is the offensive line. And what we kept hearing this week is about the aggressive approach of the offensive line that I believe Zach Banner said, or maybe it was Kevin Dotson, that the goal of the offensive lineman is to kill their opponent, whoever's across from them, on every play. So there's definitely a new level of intensity that is being installed and instilled in the linemen from Coach Adrian Klemm. And, you know, that physicality was missing last year. So maybe in an attempt to overcompensate, that's becoming a focal point. But what's your take on the O-line, the discussion around the O-line this week? And how do you see that translating into the running game this season?
So I'll give you a sort of a roundabout personal story and personal take. I grew up with a stepdad who was a two-time state champion in football and a first-team in offensive tackle and first-team defensive tackle. He was a football coach. And he always told me that you watch the line. Number one, when you watch a football game, you watch the line. It tells you everything you need to know immediately. Secondly, when you build a football team, you don't build from the outside in. You build from the inside out. And you focus on the line, on fundamental physical line play. He was the head football coach for a while at my school, and he was also the line coach. He didn't really care about plays. He ran a very simple offense. But it was all about technique. It was all about hand placement. It was all about, on defense, the way to navigate leverage on an opponent. Even if you're smaller, it's not an overly complicated game in sort of a general sense. You block, you tackle, and it all starts at the line. And if you're getting beat at the line of scrimmage, you don't have a chance, at least you don't have a strong chance, to manipulate the other team to do what you want them to do. Your blocks aren't going to be as effective. Your running plays are not going to be as effective. You're not going to be able to create those lanes. You're not going to be able to create that time for the quarterback to, you know, scan the offense, or defense, rather. I'm sorry. There's a whole lot there that starts with the line. And last year, we saw so many issues with that offensive line that were, you know, unnerving, disturbing. And I know Ben played under some patchy offensive lines in the past, and his youth may have been able to, I don't know, compensate or shield those lines from overt or clear criticism. But we are not going to be a successful football team unless we come back to some of those fundamentals at the offensive line. In particular, I've never had much doubt in the defensive line, particularly on off team. I always feel like it's a strong suit. But Kendrick Green, man, I really like that. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. Joe Haig from Tampa Bay. I don't know exactly what his role is going to be, but I like that depth. Some of the I'm really happy to see, at least now, that it's a clear focus of the Steelers coaching staff. Physicality, you know, asserting the will of the offensive line. A lot of stuff starts there, and I think we have a lot of room to grow, and I'm optimistic, but again, I mean, I sound like a broken record when I say that. I'm always optimistic when it comes to the Steelers.
Right. Yeah, and I think just having the wherever you focus, that's where your energy goes. So I think having that focus as a team on offense, that physicality, it's going to impact the passing game. It's going to take some of the pressure off Roethlisberger to where he doesn't have to be the focal point every time and feel that he's got to make the play every time. And it's going to open up the offense, because last year teams knew the Steelers couldn't run. So they muddled everything in the middle of the field. They pressed the receivers. They shut down the short passing game. And that's where you saw the collapse occur at the end of the season. So if you can establish even a semblance of a running game, because we had a non-existent running game last year, the team is going to be better. The passing game is going to be better. So it's just a matter of, you know, it all sounds good now. It's just a matter of, can that turn into, you know, an effective product, an outcome come next season? So, you know, that's definitely something that we're going to be paying attention to, and we'll probably hear more about as time goes on. So we're going to stop right now, because we have our second Steel Study commercial coming your way, and maybe I'm going to make fun of Andrew again. So you're going to have to stay tuned and check it out.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy.
Looking for real Steelers news from native Steelers fans? Tired of the cliched reports from ESPN that give you nothing but the obvious? Then you found yourself in the right place. The Steel Study, led by two football nerds, Andrew and Jeremy, with a random, weird sense of humors. Where history, education, Steelers football, and random weirdness collides. Drop us a line at thesteelstudy@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at Steel Study. Let the lesson begin.
All right, and we're back. We hope you enjoyed the commercial, the second commercial. And we're going to continue our conversation about organized team activities, OTAs, my favorite and your favorite. Shifting gears a little bit, Najee Harris has been getting a ton of attention even before OTAs began at rookie minicamp. And Andrew and I have been talking. There's been a lot of pressure placed on Harris in terms of how he will contribute to the team this year. Pro Football Focus said earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday, that he's expected to contribute about 1,400 total yards, 9 touchdowns. That's their projection. But if you look at the media, you look at how he's being hyped up as almost a folk hero in Pittsburgh before he's even taken a snap. Is that healthy? Is that detrimental? And Andrew, just want to hear your take on that.
Yeah, I can't imagine a more pressure-packed situation than Alabama football. Kid knows what he's coming to, and the expectations are certainly high. I mean, I have high expectations for him. And being a running back selected in the first round in the last 5 years has been a pretty high bar. Not something that has happened too often. I can't think of the last. Who was the last one?
Alabama back?
No, who's the last running back selected in the first round?
By the Steelers?
No, just in general.
Oh, jeez.
I just was trying to go through this the other day because I think it's pretty rarefied air, at least the last 5 years, to be selected in the first round as a running back.
I think there were a few guys drafted last year, but that's something that we could even research just to see what the contributions are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I have high expectations for him too, and I don't feel like he cares. His attitude in that press conference, or press conference is a loose term, Zoom call, was sort of flippant in a way that I really respect and I really enjoy. He seems like a guy who's more interested in just, I don't know, I play football, man. I've been doing that since seventh grade. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's very much a workmanlike approach to the game.
Right.
And I think the other thing that we need to consider is he's 24 years old. So he's not one of these guys. The Steelers like to get prospects who come in that are 20 years old.
He's older 21. Than Juju.
Yeah. So, and again, 24 isn't, he isn't aged out of the position by any means, but he he's seasoned. He played big time, probably on the biggest stage in college football.
Yeah.
He's NFL ready. So I think that's why there's the high expectation for him. And, you know, I'm working on a poem, a little Najee poem. I am. And that's going to become a feature of the site here. I had the pining for the season that I put out earlier this week. But he almost has like this – he's being looked at as the savior for this team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we see the shortcomings that they had last year, the lack of the running game. Everybody is looking at Harris to push the Steelers over the hump. If he's that guy and they happen to win number seven, he'll be in the Pittsburgh Hall of Fame. I don't know if he's going to Canton.
I know.
But he will be in the black and gold Hall of Fame.
Seriously, though, you put him on that team last year, what happens those last five games?
Yeah.
It's a different team.
Completely different team.
I mean, if you put him up, the Washington game was a disaster in so many cases. But, I mean, there was chances that they had to win those last few games, especially if they had some semblance of a running game.
Yeah, oh, my God. You just reminded me of the Washington game, and then that was after the stinking Wednesday Ravens game, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. And I think I was listening to it in the car, or I might have been watching it in the car.
Yeah.
Whatever is
it's disgusting. I want to forget about.
We didn't have a bye week last year, and people forget that.
Right.
We did not have a bye week because a traditional bye week is you leave Sunday and you do not come back until the next week.
Correct.
You have a break, a legitimate sort of I'm away from the facility break. The Steelers didn't have that because the bye that they were given by the NFL, they were preparing for a game.
Yes, because of and that was because of the whole Tennessee.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And yes. Tennessee was, I mean, and we barely won that game.
Yep.
If you remember, and Tennessee should have been given an L, just period. I mean, yeah. I mean that's a different issue, and we're sort of getting off the tangent here. Maybe we're just expressing our frustrations from last year. But you put Najee on that team last year. It's the Browns are facing a totally different team.
Right, and I think the response that we see from Harris. If despite all this pressure, he comes in and produces, I think you see even more what caliber of player you have at this position. So that is definitely exciting to see how that plays out. Again, he's one of the big storylines to follow here in camp. Something else in camp, Cam Hayward has been – not camp, excuse me, OTAs. Cam Hayward, who was very outspoken against participating in organized team activities, shows up. He's there. I know we mentioned it earlier, but also, too, he's been more vocal this past week, coming out in defense of Ben, just speaking on a lot of different topics. What's your take on that?
I remember hearing different stories from players about how the defense and the offense are, like, effectively two different teams sometimes. You know, like, the defense does their drills, they do their practice, they interact with one another, they're in their own meeting rooms, and they don't necessarily cross the lines with the offense. I think it says a lot about Ben's leadership. I think it says a lot about Cam's leadership. And I think it says a lot about Tomlin's construction of that team as a single unit when you have a defensive player speaking out unsolicitedly about Ben Roethlisberger, about the quarterback of the team. Doesn't have to do that necessarily.
Right.
If he didn't say anything about the offense, nobody would think twice about it, really, because right. He's a defensive player. And I sort of like that about Tomlin in the sense that I've always felt that he has constructed teams. And I know that sounds ridiculous to say, but what I mean is in a less abstract way, people are all in, you know, for one another. And I think that goes to what we talked about before, which is you don't have, you know, zero losing seasons over the course of 14 years without constructing some buy-in from across the line of scrimmage, from defense and offensive players. We are a team, not single units.
Right. That reminds me of something. There are two errors that I want to – well, one error and something I just want to make fun of Andrew with.
Yeah, we
right
got
now.
It.
Uh-huh. So, but last week we were talking about the longest winning streak of NFL teams. Andrew was right. It was 17. I corrected him and said 16, but then I came back and said 17. Folks, I was wrong. It is actually 17. I'll eat that one. But I also want to point out that Andrew said remarkable 178 times last week. So I did get on him about that. So I don't think we've heard it once yet today. But just wanted to put that out there.
It's quite remarkable that it only took you, 35 minutes into the podcast before you said it.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to make sure I got that in there. So a couple other pieces here, and we'll wrap up our talk on OTAs for this week. But it's good to see Devin Bush and Zach Banner back on the field at OTAs following their injuries.
Looking shredded.
Yeah, Devin Bush.
I don't necessarily know what any of that means. But it's pretty.
I don't either.
It just means that the guy was dedicated in the moments he was out.
Dude's going to look good on the beach.
It's fine. I don't care. I just care about him with 55 on his chest and flying around and making cartwheel interceptions and all the things that we have come to expect from him over his short, young career.
Yeah, and hopefully he could stay healthy this season because the inside linebacker position is critical to the success of the team.
I saw a highlight. We were talking about the game, the Browns game earlier. I saw a highlight where Cassius Marsh gets just blown over in that playoff game. And it's so frustrating to watch.
I want to backpedal on my criticism of Cassius Marsh. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he signed with the team late, learning the team. So he is a good dude, and he has bounced around. I think I heard this is his eighth team or something ridiculous.
In 7 years or something like that, right.
So there's a lot to be said for his stick-to-itiveness to stay in the game, and he's finding a place. So props to you, Cassius, for sticking around. Zach Banner also being back. Very excited to see what he can contribute on the right side of that line. Again, physicality, but devastating injury last year. Good to see him back.
Yeah, I was really excited for what he could have brought to the team last year. I think the team was too. There was sort of a rallying point. He was a rallying point. And it was really tough to see him go down early too.
Yeah. Yep. So good news on the injury front in OTAs. And I just want to leave with this, Andrew, that somebody who was very difficult to not notice is unnoticeable in OTAs because he's not there.
Right.
Juju. Where's he at?
I don't know. He's probably making a TikTok video.
Probably.
Or twitching. I don't know. Is that a verb? Can you say twitching?
I don't know.
When you are... Isn't that the live streaming video? This is terrible.
Yeah.
We both have young kids. We don't know.
Yeah, young... Paw Patrol and Blaze and...
I don't know Blaze.
Oh, yeah. Well...
We should have a conversation about our children's shows.
We could. We could. I'm trying to brainwash my children to be hardcore Steelers fans and...
My son is such a hardcore Steelers fan already that he made me take his shirt off so he could watch the Steelers game without a shirt on and yell at the TV.
That's crazy.
Indiscriminately yelling at the TV.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Did he pound a beer?
He would have if I let him. the dude's ready to go. He thinks every sport is football.
There's nothing wrong with that. My son, I think he likes to mess with me. So, being that we're on the eastern part of the state, he says, "Go Eagles." He may or may not have slept in the shed.
Hey, as I've said many times, I appreciate Commonwealth football, so I'll give him that.
Yes, I can appreciate it too, but there's only one real team in Pennsylvania. Anyway, shifting gears, I'm sure we'll see Juju back at some point.
They effectively share a birthday. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be an August story for
Ferrari. There we go. There we go. So OTAs done for this week. I believe there are more OTAs that will be happening next week. So we'll be sure to bring you coverage of that on the site in our articles and through study sessions. So be on the lookout there. The one thing that you'll see on the site, we wrapped up all of the profiles on the undrafted rookie free agents. So you have those to take a look at. Just wrapped up reviews of the two undrafted receivers, Rico Bussey and Isaiah McCoy, both have the deep speed element. If you get some time, read through those. But next week on the study sessions, I'll be doing little brief overviews of each of the undrafted rookie free agents. So pay attention to that. And I just want to shift the conversation here before we move to Andrew's history nugget and talk about the quarterback depth chart. You're going to see a series on the site coming up where we're looking at the depth chart, the players at the position. But just to go through, you look at it, we're set at the starter with Ben, barring injury. Behind him, Mason Rudolph, the number two, Josh Dobbs, number three, Dwayne Haskins. We don't know where he he falls right now, if he even makes a roster. And then you have Roland Rivers, who came to rookie camp for a tryout, has been in OTAs. Andrew, what's your take on the quarterback room? How do you see it shaking out?
So Dobbs and Rudolph are on one-year deals, aren't they?
I believe so.
Is that right?
No. Rudolph was just re-upped.
Okay.
So he's gone a two-year contract.
I don't know what to make of Rudolph. I've always sort of liked him. He looks the part in terms of size. And if you watch him at Oklahoma State, I know that's now going on 5 years ago, but the kid could throw. He was a solid quarterback in the Big 12. I have hope for him, but I also number one, have always thought that Dobbs is, and I think I've heard this implied, at least, you know, whether it was on the Depot or in other areas, he's a coach in waiting.
Yeah.
You know, he's a rocket scientist at Tennessee. He wasn't.
That's not an exaggeration. He is a rocket scientist.
Yeah, right. He's a kid who is clearly intelligent and knows football and probably has a lot to add from the sidelines. He's gonna be on the team in some sort of player coach role. I don't mean coach role in the sense that he's gonna be telling Ben how to play the position. I mean in terms of, you know, developing the room and providing some intelligent conversation in the room. But we have a number one draft pick or a first round draft pick in the room, and it's not named Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah,
and I can't, man. I for whatever reason I've said to you and I said to our fellow. Colleague Jake.
Oh, there's Jake again.
Yeah, there's Jake. His fandom is barely counted because he lives in Maryland. sorry, Chad. Chad, yours counts.
Yeah.
But he had so much talent at Ohio State. There's a reason he went number one. To the Washington football team. The kids. Was in a bad situation in Washington. That franchise is a mess. I honestly have no idea how it's going to shake out. They can't keep everyone.
They can't keep everyone.
I mean, Rivers is probably going to be on a practice squad somewhere. I hope it's here because I think he's got a lot of talent. I don't know. You just upped Rudolph. You just upped Dobbs. I mean, to me, I just said it to you before we started recording. It feels like a little bit of a mess right now. But, I mean, maybe it's a good mess to be in. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, Ben, again, he's a lock. I think Rudolph was signed. He signed that mini extension with the expectation that next year Ben goes. There's at least some stability for a year.
Right.
At the position, they're going to go after their guy next year. I think that's understood, unless there is some type of emergence from Rudolph or from Haskins. Dobbs, I agree with you, he's not the depth quarterback of the future. He is not the starter. I think and that's a good point I've never thought of. He would be a good coach.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
He's like a Byron Leftwich type of guy.
Who's now an offensive coordinator.
And who now has a Super Bowl ring.
Right. And who will eventually be a head coach. What I see happening, and I really believe this, is when we've talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, they can take your junk off of the trash heap, polish it, and turn it in. It might not be gold, but it might be silver that's
Villanueva.
Really shiny. Yes.
Chip Kelly saw something in Villanueva, signed him, moved him around a lot.
Right.
In those mini camps in Philadelphia, he had him at defensive tackle, I think.
Yeah, D-tackle.
And then offensive tackle, and he got cut. It was like one of the last cuts, goes to the Steelers, and he's a reliable starter. And look, now he's with the Ravens.
Yeah. And so what I see happening, and I do think this will happen, and Haskins came into OTAs. Looking very fit and healthy. I know that was reported in a lot of the Steelers' social media feeds that I saw from beat writers. I think he overtakes Dobbs. I think he's the number three. Rudolph's number two. So I think you're set.
They're actually number two and number three.
Yeah.
They're jerseys.
Wow. Well, that's crazy. And then for Rivers, you know, again, Slippery Rock guy, Western PA. We talked about the connections with Jake. I'm rooting for the kid. Because I really want to see him make it. I have a passion for these underdog players that are smaller level college football. I'd love to see him make the practice squad or come in and just be undeniable with his talent and find a spot on the roster. But I think realistically, I see Ben 1, Mason 2, Haskins 3.
But I don't know if you can keep four guys.
Right. I mean,
you don't want to cut Dobbs. I don't think.
They traded him a few years ago for a fifth rounder. I think
Jacksonville, right.
I just don't see him. I think that Dobbs is there for insurance in the event that Haskins, the bottom falls out. I think he's insurance.
If the bottom falls out, who cares?
Yeah.
You didn't get him for anything.
Right. But I think Haskins proves himself, Dobbs gets cut.
And I think the Haskins-Tomlin connection is important.
Agreed.
I really do.
Agreed.
And I think he had a lot of maturity and growth over that last, 10 months or 8 months since he got cut.
Yeah. Yeah. So stay tuned. We'll have a write-up on the site about the quarterback depth chart. And like I said, we're going to be going through the depth chart for the Steelers moving forward. But it is now that time in the show for Andrew, the mule, Malkasian. Drop the history bomb.
Who is the one player for the Pittsburgh Steelers that Art Mooney said was the best athlete he had ever seen?
Rod Woodson.
That's a really good guess. It's so off, though. it's a really good guess. It's Byron White. You ever hear of Byron White?
I have.
Byron White is the fourth overall selection by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Actually, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Mm, maybe I haven't.
the fourth overall selection by the eventual Steelers in 1938. He's picked fourth out of Colorado. He's a tailback, halfback. Some really impressive speed and athleticism. The guy's about 5'11", 6 foot, 175, 185 pounds, something like that. Really great athlete. Finishes second in the Heisman voting in 1937, his senior year. He's drafted in 38, and he's really unsure of whether or not he wants to play for the Steelers. Not because I'm not going to call them the Pirates for the sake of argument. They're the Steelers, but understand that at this moment in history, they are the Pirates, or the Rooney Boys, as they were sometimes called. Mm. So he's not sure if he wants to play for the Steelers, and has nothing to do with the team, and has nothing to do with the city. It has everything to do with the fact that he was offered a Rhodes Scholarship.
Mm.
It's 1938. Rhodes Scholarship committee members say that they will suspend his admission to the program for 1 year. Okay, 38. Leads the league in rushing, is the highest paid player, really just jumps off the charts. Guy's athleticism is killer. 39 comes, and he finally enrolls at Oxford for the Rhodes Scholarship Program. But in 39, he gets to London, and World War II breaks out. Obviously, the September 1st, the Germans invade Poland. Yes, there is a little bit of a stalemate there for a period of time for those of you who are World War II buffs, but there is some serious concern, and he returns to the United States shortly thereafter. And in coming back, he does not go to the Steelers. He goes and enters Yale Law School. He's at Yale. He is also looking to sort of split the difference here. He still wants to play football, so he signs with the Lions, and he plays in 1940 and 1941, leading the league in rushing in 1940. Pretty impressive. But his football career is cut short because in 1942, in 41, we enter the war, but effectively it's 42 before we get, men enrolling and enlisting. So he cuts his NFL career short, 1 year with the Steelers, led the league in rushing, 2 years with the Lions. One of those years led the league in rushing again after a small hiatus. Goes and is an intelligence officer in the Second World War. And in fact, one of his claims to fame there is in the Pacific Theater, John F. Kennedy's boat is sunk, the PT-109, split in half. John Kennedy swims and gets help from an islander. Byron White is the man who writes up the intelligence report on that occurrence. After the war, he comes back. He finishes his degree at Yale and then ultimately begins a legal career that is long and distinguished. But what had happened previously, outside of just writing the intelligence report on the PT-109 crash of John Kennedy in World War II, he began some sort of a relationship with Joe Kennedy, John Kennedy's father, while he was a student at Oxford, because Joe Kennedy was the ambassador to Great Britain during the war. And he just happened to know him. So when John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy at the time, launches his presidential campaign in 1960, Byron White is leading the campaign for Colorado. He's advocating for the young senator's presidency in Colorado. By the time President Kennedy wins, Byron White has gained some deep appreciation from President Kennedy, and in 1962, he nominates former Pittsburgh Steelers running back to the Supreme Court of the United States of America, in which he serves from 1962 to 1993, writing a total of 994 opinions, including a dissenting vote on one of the most controversial votes in American history, Roe v. Wade. Byron White, Pittsburgh Steelers, wow. Fourth overall draft pick in 1938, second in the Heisman voting for 37, and Supreme Court Associate Justice.
Wow.
For the fourth longest tenure of the 20th century.
Wow. I don't know what to say, but wow. Do you think maybe Najee Harris will follow a similar
step? Yeah, right. One of the things about him is that not only was he a great athlete, but he was an incredibly intelligent man, as you know, but he's also philanthropic. And so the NFL holds a Byron Wizard White award every year for people who have been charitable in their community. And it's not, it's sort of like a second, a lower tier, Walter Payton Man of the Year. So guys who have won it are guys like, most recently, Chris Long, mm-hmm. Malcolm Jenkins from the Eagles, but there's been plenty of Steelers who won it. And the last Steeler who won it was Charlie Batch. But curiously, there have been two Steelers running backs who have won the award. Any guesses?
Bettis?
No.
Parker? Willie Parker?
No.
Franco Harris?
Yes.
Okay, I got one.
And somebody else who served their country, like Byron White.
Oh, Rocky Blyer.
Rocky Blyer. That's it. Yeah. That's the history notebook for today.
Love it. Love it. Andrew, as always, fantastic. That was great. Now, we've got a new part of the show. It's called our Steelers six-pack. Six Lombardi trophies. We have six questions. Andrew, I have six questions for you. I want the answer that comes.
You didn't tell me this.
Exactly.
You didn't tell me this was happening.
Exactly.
I got to drive. I can't have a six-pack.
This is a new part of the show. And when they win number seven, we'll go to the seven-pack. So here we go. I'm going to ask you a question. You give me the first response that comes
to your
head.
I'm going to get them all wrong.
Here we go. Well, some of these are just your opinions. Total number of rushing yards, Najee Harris, year one. Go.
1,200.
1,200. If there were to be an actor you would choose in casting a film about Ben Roethlisberger, who would you cast as Big Ben?
Radio silence on a podcast is always good.
Got to make a commitment, dude.
Oh, man, this is tough.
I could play the Jeopardy music right now.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's such a – I don't even know actors. Who's the guy on the CBS? Oh, who's the guy on the CBS show Seals or whatever?
Dude, I don't watch TV. You're being exposed for being culturally
illiterate.
Yes.
Well, did you know who Byron White was before today?
No.
Yeah, you're historically illiterate.
Come on, just say a name.
I don't know. I cannot answer that question.
Okay, so all right, you.
Oh, you know what? We'll go Vince Vaughn just for the size.
All right, Vince Vaughn. Okay,
and he'll be funny.
Your money, baby. Question number three. Total number of passing yards and touchdowns for Ben Roethlisberger next season.
Oh, we got an extra game too. Yards, it's got to be at least four, right? At least 4,000. At least.
Okay. You tell me.
Yeah, at least 4,000, but I would take the over if that was a bet. And touchdowns, what did he have last year?
33.
I was just going to say, I thought he had 35. Okay, 33. I'll go 35. Just round it up a little bit.
All right. Player who has the biggest breakout explosion for the Steelers this season?
Najee Harris.
Okay. Well, that was pretty
Yeah, I mean, bringing it full circle from after the commercial, I mean, it's we have high expectations for Najee, and I think he doesn't care. And I mean that in a good way.
All right. And then the last one. If David DeCastro was an animal, what would he be?
He'd be one of those, like, those warthogs. You know what I mean? Like, those sort of, like, the hogs that are down in, like, Arkansas and Texas and Oklahoma. Those, they're just nasty, nasty animals, man. I don't mean in terms of annoying.
Andrew just called David DeCastro a warthog. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't know who I am. Well, I mean that in terms of the he's – you don't want to mess with that dude.
No.
There's a level of violence that is, like, sort of lying dormant in him that can – and if you've ever tried to – I mean, if you've ever tried to, like, herd a pig or something like that, they're not very docile animals, especially when feeling threatened.
Well, there you have it, folks. There's the first Steelers six-pack. Andrew, thank you so much for the history nugget, for being a good sport with our six questions. And that is the end of episode six, the Steel Study Podcast, wrapping it up here. Again, thank you so much for supporting the site, for listening to the podcast, the study sessions, reading our work. It means so much to us. We ask you to please continue to share our work with your family and friends. Drop us an email, thestillstudy@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @stillstudy.
I want to know, too, like, give us some feedback on these history nuggets. Are these things, you know, worth your time? Are they interesting? Do you want me to elaborate more in an article? Do you want them to be shorter? Do you think they're stupid and I should be removed from the show entirely and this should be just Jeremy's monologue with his study sessions? Give me some feedback. And Jake is not allowed to respond because I'm not interested in his opinions.
Well, we know Jake's not listening because he was supposed to send an email and he didn't. So I think I'm going to defriend him. And on that note, thank you so much for everything. We will see you back here next week. Same Steelers time, same Steelers channel. Andrew, thanks, man.
We don't have a channel.
We're going to get one. It's coming.
All right. See you, Jeremy.
See you, Andrew.
Peace.